SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's about almost 15 into hour three. It's been a fast moving morning, and we'll keep Alan Foreman, who's fast moving himself. He's not going to tell people where he's going. I'm going to keep it a secret. But he's getting a few days off. He's going to with the family. And Alan, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to hear from you.
Well, and, you know, obviously we talked earlier in the summer and late spring, and you know, quite a few topics that, you know, constantly, you know, come up around the game where we rely on your expertise. And the latest, last week, two stories, actually. The Wayne Potts scenario at Laurel in the MJC, asking him to take his 30 horses off the grounds, and then simultaneously running a horse at Monmouth, running a horse at Saratoga, and then over the weekend too, Carl Broberg saying that Remington is preventing him from taking stalls, having stalls. He can enter, but they don't want him on the grounds, and it begs the question of the determinations involved in this kind of thing, Alan. And we've touched on it before, you know, the right of exclusion that the racetrack has, but then there's the question of commissions and regulators and the necessity for there to be actual rulings against parties so that other racetracks can then have a grounds for excluding, correct?
Correct. So, what you have is a tension between the state, which issues the license, the occupational license to the individual, and that individual is subject to the rules and regulations that are established by the state's racing commission. And then you have whatever rules, rights that a racetrack has as a property owner. And that's not uniform throughout the country. We went through this, if you recall, last year with Jerry Hollendorfer, because the issues are relatively the same. And then when the Stronach Group barred Jerry Hollendorfer from its tracks, and it was honored by Del Mar, and when Jerry then sought to race elsewhere, the question was, his license has not been denied, it hasn't been revoked, he has no regulatory rulings against him, therefore, why should any other tracks bar him? When a racing commission issues a ruling against or suspends or revokes the license of a licensee, by rules of reciprocity, that suspension or revocation is honored by all racing jurisdictions in North America. On the other hand, when a track exercises its so-called private property rights, common law right of exclusion, their ban may or may not be honored by other racetracks who may communicate with the track that is barred, that individual or otherwise, and tracks at times will bar someone but not give a reason, may not say anything and just say quietly, well, take your horses off. I don't want to create any problems for you, but I want you to leave our grounds. And but for aggressive reporting in the media, such as the Pollock report that discussed this story or how it might surface in the media elsewhere, other tracks might not, or horsemen or the public might not know that that individual has been barred at that racetrack. And the private, the rule of exclusion is not uniform. For example, with respect to the Stronach Group and Wayne Potts, they didn't have to give him a reason why they were excluding him. They may not have given him a reason. Typically, they will not give the reason because that may land them in litigation. But then you have a jurisdiction like New York that by a series of court cases over the years, going back to Buddy Jacobson in the 1970s, both the state and NYRA are required to accord due process, give a reason, conduct a hearing that is subject to judicial review. And then you have states like West Virginia that by regulation, if you're dealing with a licensee, are required to give the licensee notice of why that individual is being barred. That person gets a hearing, subject again to review by the commission or subsequently by state courts. And it's also done by contract. One of the issues in California was whether Hollendorfer, to due process by virtue of the a Thoroughbred Trainers Association in California, and in Pennsylvania, where by contract, parks, Penn National are required to accord hearings to individuals who are asked to leave. So the landscape, the rules are different when it relates to a racetrack as opposed to a racing commission. And with respect to Wayne Potts, there are and have been no rulings against him, no investigations by state authorities or otherwise. This was strictly an action by the Stronach Group. Actually, it was Maryland Jockey Club. I don't know the extent to which even the Stronach Group was involved.
These incidents and these situations, get a reaction, Alan, that, invariably is going to produce more animus and negativity from observers, demanding that why would Naira allow this horse? The understanding of the mechanics, I think is important, before, the Oxbow incidents, that we would have daily, take place. I bristle at, the constant barrage, that comes with anything that is viewed as controversial when it involves the mechanics of legalities. I mean, I love the concept that, if we had uniformity, why wouldn't legal demands that are involved already in, like, for instance, in the way New York approaches things, what would be superseded by some, uniform policy?
Well, it would not. And I don't believe that if we had a central racing office with a commissioner, that the commissioner could take any action similar to what the Maryland Jockey Club did or what any other track would do without according some level of due process. I mean, even if you look at your sports leagues, there is no action taken against a player unless that player has been accorded due process. And I don't see, if we reorganized into a central office, that the racetracks are going to give up their private, their right, the common law right of exclusion. So you're going to have these situations, and it creates problems because if I'm an attorney advising a racetrack that has the common law right to exclude, I don't want a reason given. I don't want my client giving a reason, because if my client gives a reason, that might set in motion legal rights that the person who's being barred or being asked to leave would otherwise not have. But you don't have a uniform system, and you won't have a uniform system because the rules are different from state to state when it comes to the common law right of exclusion and any exceptions to that. So with respect to the regulators, it's uniform. Now, I'm fairly certain in the Potts case, the Maryland Racing Commission, which is one of the best in the country, and their staff under Mike Hopkins is bar none the best in the country, looked at this situation. I'm sure they got calls, or they became aware from what they saw of what Maryland Jockey Club was doing, and I have no doubt that they investigated, and it appears that they concluded that there were no regulatory violations of any kind that would invoke either charges against Mr. Potts or a hearing or some disciplinary ruling. And I think New York faced with the same problem, that they had no reason to exclude Wayne Potts based on any suspensions, rulings, or otherwise. NYRA's concern is that they have to, if they're going to exclude Wayne Potts, they're going to have a reason to do so, which means they're going to have to accord him some due process. It's going to have to be put on notice of what the allegation is and otherwise. Now, I firmly believe in Maryland they did investigate. I have no doubt they talked to him. I have no doubt they talked to Marcus Vitale. I have no doubt they talked to personnel and came to the conclusion that there was nothing there. So, notwithstanding there's an article that, you know, seems to inflame the situation, there's probably more to the story and more to the reason why the Maryland Jockey Club excluded Wayne Potts than simply what you read. And that's not a criticism of the article. It's just I have no inside knowledge, but I believe that there's more to the story.
On a broader basis, and you referenced, and for those that haven't seen the piece that that Ray and Natalie Voss put together at Pollock Report, it's absolutely well worth reading. It also brings
Did a great job. Natalie she's terrific. I mean, they did a very good job here.
Well, and it brings in. It brings in, you know, other issues, including, you know, the licensing of individuals that, you know, that have, that may and may clearly have connections, you know, to people who are being excluded. And Alan, I mean, you've seen this in different, you know, in different forms, and you referenced all the way back, you know, to the 70s, essentially. What is the best course of action, I suppose, is a fair question, to alleviate, you know, these kinds of difficulties, cross purposes, impressions of impropriety, etc.
Right. Well, look, under the current framework, situations like this, if, for example, you're dealing with someone who is under.
Well, he is in the car. Alan is in the car. So, yeah, we lost him. All right, we'll get I think he had one call in. Somebody called in, and that we lost them for 3 or 4 seconds. But that was the telltale click. We'll get Alan Foreman back. I mean, this is very hard, and you know, there. You know, I suppose I'm going to ask Alan about the owner responsibility in this as well, because you know there are owners who, you know, maybe. In some cases, I'm not going to say in some cases, the owners that, you know, are certainly aware, you know, of potential
impropriities.
There
sorry,
we go.
I was
vamping a little bit. I was going to also ask you to, in addition to a course of action for the industry, I also wanted to ask you what the owner, what you feel the owner onus is too. I mean, for owners that, you know, in some cases they have to be aware of, you know, of the seriousness of the circumstances involved in having somebody that they're using be barred from a grounds or acted upon by regulators.
So, as far as future course of action, I'm going to come back to something that I've stood on your program before and that I very strongly advocate for, and that is a restoration of the Thoroughbred Racing Protective Bureau or some investigative arm of the industry that we currently and have lacked for some time. You know, as I've said before, when I started in the business and for the first 15, almost 20 years of my career, I was able to work very closely with the what was then the TRPB, because it was the industry's investigative arm. So these kinds of situations, whether it's allegations of paper training or fraud or whatever, are you know, the industry's on top of these. They have investigators who can exchange information, who can get information, who can refer information, who can communicate with each other. It is a substantial weakness in our industry that we have, and I know it's been part of the conversations with the Horse Racing Integrity Act and expanding the act and otherwise, but we desperately need to have something like that, because what you have now is tracks communicating with each other, racing commissions communicating with each other, but not necessarily a full understanding of what's going on. So that would be my solution. But also understand that when you're dealing with suspended individuals, and I use New York as the best example, they very carefully monitor to ensure that these individuals are not subverting their suspensions or penalties. Because if so, they're going to be brought back in for more serious penalties or referred otherwise. So like in Florida, where you're dealing with Navarro, not only should he be carefully watched, but I'm sure that the federal government is carefully watching his activities. So I know my experience has been regulators will look very closely at every transaction, every transfer of a horse, every individual who was training horses that was in the care of a suspended trainer, all of that. You don't see the wool pulled over the eyes too often. I caveat that with the fact that in Florida there is no racing commission, and that so I don't know who's necessarily minding the store there, other than perhaps the burden is on Gulfstream Park to do it, as you know, we read the quotes from Billy Badgett in the situation down in Florida.
How often have owners been excluded from entry?
Very rarely. And that is extremely, extremely rare. I'm just trying to think back to situations. I guess the last time I remember that would be the Gill situation at Delaware Park. And all the controversy surrounding Gill. But you don't see too much with owners. You know, the business has so substantially changed. You know, there was a time when TRPB was looking at bookmakers, associations with organized gambling, commissions of crimes, and those kinds of things that really concentrated on owners more than trainers. But you don't see much of that, at least from what I see. You don't see very much of that anymore when owners being excluded.
Well, this you know, this case, these two cases, and the, you know, the reaction to them, I just felt it important that people understand, you know, what the nuance is between the racetrack authority and then regulatory authority and reciprocity. That's the right. You know, that's the central part of this, and you know, you know, there has to be, in some cases, as you reference, I mean, the due process part of it is going to enter into, you know, some of these equations, essentially.
Remember that the Navarro situation in Florida and the Potts situation in Maryland are apples and oranges. I mean, it may be a somewhat of a common theme, but Navarro's under suspension everywhere.
Right.
He's under federal indictment. So the scrutiny of transfers of horses and who were partners and what happens to interests that he had ownership of and things like that are different than the situation in Maryland, where you're not dealing with someone who has any regulatory issues whatsoever. This relates to conduct apparently at the racetrack.
Alan Foreman joining us. And Alan, before I let you go, there's always a couple of topics to wrap up with and get updates upon. And obviously, you know, it's been a very unusual middle portion of the year. And yet we continue to, you know, I don't want to even say limp along, because things have been remarkably good and effective, really coast to coast. You know, there's been the occasional jocks room COVID flare up and issue, but some Mid-Atlantic some Mid-Atlantic reference points, and also the status of the redevelopment plan in Maryland.
Sure. Well, the good news on the redevelopment plan is the Maryland Stadium Authority has actively begun work. They have solicited bids for architectural and design firms to do the design work, the infrastructure work, and ultimately design the facilities. I would expect by probably the end of fall, maybe sometime in November, a firm will have been selected. They're moving forward in other areas. Remember, the project now is under the jurisdiction of the Maryland Stadium Authority, and they're both their bond group for the issuance of bonds and the design portion are well underway. That's the good news. The other good news is that the casinos in Maryland reopened. They're opened at 50% capacity, but amazingly, for the month of July, the numbers from the casinos were 91% of the share that the casinos generated a year ago at 100% capacity.
Amazing.
So that's a pretty amazing story, which means that the money is coming in that will help to fund the project. But we've got a long way to go, and hopefully, we're going to get this pandemic under control and we're going to get like back to normal. I have enormous respect for everyone in this business who is under very trying circumstances, moving forward, doing the best they can. It's a very, very stressful time for everyone, and we just gotta keep moving forward.
Well put, and looking forward to the 2021 match series too. There's even been some references. Jill Byrne and others have, in recent visits, said that they're looking forward to bringing Match back for 21.
Well, we all are. Can you imagine what chaos we would have had with Colonial having to close down? And we made the right call. And yeah. We'll keep our fingers crossed for next year, and hopefully everybody will be getting back to a semblance of normalcy, and we'll just keep our fingers crossed and pray for everybody on that one.
Alan, safe travels. I greatly appreciate the visit, and we will reach for you again soon.
Thank you, Steve. Stay safe, stay well, and I say that to everybody who listens to the show. Thank you.
Alan Forman, everybody, and as always, helpful and informative. And now we'll move to enriching, because Bill Downs is back, and when we talked to Bill... last week, right? Last week, Bill. We sent people home happy. That's all I remember.
Yeah. We try at least.
What was it? I'm trying to think of what the race was and the horses involved. I keep everything. So on my desk somewhere, I'm sure I've got the charts. But there was Tom Amos. After his visit, his horse Pranked ran big at a price, and Hendy Woods. You gave out Hendy Woods 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah. That's right. Yeah, and you mentioned Amos. Amos was actually at Indiana Grand yesterday. I know. TV and all that, but he had a few horses in. He got a W yesterday, and I'm like, oh, look who's here.
Well, and it was notable, actually, and I think I've got, yeah, I'm pretty sure I saved that chart, too, because Soul Street, right, yesterday?
Yeah, the Kirk Curb Street part owner, of course, ESPN, college football lead analyst, and I think they're going to even be doing a Monday Night Football game this year, him and Fowler. He owns part of Soul Street to... was able to relax finally, and that was the key. He didn't have to go as fast, I think, helped things. But, yeah, at the top of the stretch where the last couple of races, I'm going, oh, boy, he's looking like he's getting a little fatigued. I didn't get that notion at all at the top of the stretch, and maybe it was just the field. He was just playing better, and that could be the case. But, shorting up to 5.5 again, I thought helped a little bit as well. But, finally put everything together and got his first win in Indiana. And you know, Herb Street, I try to get him to respond on Twitter. I didn't get him. He didn't respond though. So.
Well, if the college football stuff gets completely scuttled, maybe he'll tune in to the next opportunities. But yeah, I did notice that, and you know, the racing, Bill. I mean, every time we talk now, and you know, we go into November with the season, it has been just an outstanding meet at Indiana Grand, and another $2 million night last night, yesterday. You know, the racing is compelling. You have big full fields. We've got regular stakes opportunities, including tomorrow. And one of the reasons I reached out for today was so that we could get out in front of tomorrow's two stakes.
Yes. And, you know, the good news is you talk about the quality of the racing and whatnot. At least, you know, every year we go through a little bit of a wet stretch, and I always lament on Twitter about, hey guys, it rains in central Indiana in the summer months. That's what it does. And, you know, you're going to have stretches where it seems like you're not on the turf at all, but, you know, it is what it is. It's central Indiana. And, you know, I thought that this week the racing really kind of picked up. I was really happy with all four racing cards that we're putting forward this week. And Bettors responded, like you said, over $2 million in handle on a Monday. That's always a good thing. And we got those two Indiana bred stakes races coming up on Wednesday, and they're looking like fun races as well.
Let's take a look. We'll start, and of course, the pick five is part, you know, wraps around these two stakes. These are Indiana breds, and essentially, we're coming back to those two stakes that we talked about at the beginning of August. The Ellen's Lucky Star, where Nothing But Flowers went wire to wire, and comes back not the favorite in here. Mike Lauer's got the favorite. Copper Nickel, I'm going to try again after things going wrong in the Ellen's Lucky Star. And then, of course, the Snack was the boys' race. So we basically come back with a lot of this, not in both races, but certainly in the girls' race, in the First Lady, we got five of them coming back out of the Ellen's Lucky Star.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I had to make Copper Nickel, I thought, the favorite because she just didn't run well on turf, and that was her only turf race. She's back on dirt. Yeah. She crushed, it was against, I thought, easier than Hoosier Breeders' sophomore stakes for the fillies. But she's so impressive in both those races. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to throw a line through the race, and I'm going to make her the favorite. You know, Nothing But Flowers is the interesting case study, if you will. She's won her last two races. They were both on turf, but they were both going around a ground for the first time, and they added blinkers two starts ago. So was the uptick in form? Was it because of the turf? Was it because she's going long? Was it because she added blinkers, or is there a combination of all three? And that's where it gets real tricky. I she's going to be a top two choice. It's just a matter of whether, you know, where do I put her in the morning line? In case, you know, I think your listeners know, I make the morning line at Indiana Grand as well. And, you know, sometimes you just have to go with your gut. And you know, I think it's partial. I think it's more because of the turf. But there's those other handicapping angles that are legitimate handicapping angles that maybe it is a route. If it's a route, well, we're going around a ground today, but it's on the dirt instead of the turf.
Well, and that, you know, that win in the Hoosier Breeders' sophomore stake, and that was a stretch out opportunity. Getting back again to two turns on the dirt here, if she runs, you know, those races, Copper Nickel, you know, Copper Nickel probably wins. I'm looking through. I mean, who's supposed to, you know, necessarily jump up here under this scenario? I suppose Serena Buck is the next, you know, the next likeliest candidate.
Yeah, you know, she's two for two lifetime. She passed, I thought, was an important test. Her first time going a round of ground, first time against winners. She didn't get off the best star in the world, but she, you know, once Deshaun went after her a little bit, she responded and won by almost three lengths. Parker's on Nothing But Flowers instead of Serena Beck, but you get a very capable replacement in Manny Esquivel. who can certainly ride with the best at Indiana Grand. So that's not really an issue. But the only other thing I'd say, Steve, is Copernickel, nothing but flowers. Serena Beck, all have got tactical early speed. I just wish I could come up with the closer that could take advantage of the situation, because if that's the case, then, you know, maybe Wellington Wonder. You know, she took on Copernickel as a maiden, and yeah, she was overmatched in the race, but then she went up and finally got her elusive maiden win last time out when she went off as a 2-5 favorite. But she might have the right running style where she lets these three go at it on the front end, and she's the one that is running on a little bit late and gets the run of the race. Whether she's good enough at this point in time, that's the remains to be seen. Yeah. But at least you're going to get a real good price on her in case, you know, you just don't want to swallow chalk with those other three fillies that we mentioned.
Well, she, you know, when she faced off against Copernickel, she's clearly, I won't even say that she's necessarily a better filly now, but she would have to, I mean, to win. It's one thing to hit the board here and fill out the exotics. It feels like it's a stretch. I mean, Copernickel, you're right about Copernickel and the rationale to make her even money. And, it'd be interesting to see if Nothing But Flowers and Deshaun Parker, if they take the same tact. You know, Serena Beck has got plenty of speed. Well, it'd be interesting to see how they spill out. Let's look at the governors and the boys race going the mile and a 70. And in here, that Mai Tai's Gem we got familiar with, and there was somebody else that it was Strong Tide that won the snack. Yes,
yeah.
There we go, on a two-race win streak.
Yeah, and got bet down in the race. I was kind of surprised. That, you know, I knew he was going to get bet a little bit from after, you know, hearing some chatter about the race. And the Strong Tide certainly was the best in the Snack Stakes, and his last four races have been on turf. Now, he does have some dirt form. He was second to Mai Tai's Gem as a two-year-old in the Indiana Futurity, which he did have a very wide post in that race. So there is some dirt form in there, but just like with Copernickel, we were potentially against that filly in that Ellen's Lucky Star. We were kind of wondering about the turf breeding with Two Last Words and Mai Tai's Gem, and they both, you know, ran just, you know, I guess, very average races on turf in the Snack Stakes. Now they're back on dirt, and I think that's a big equalizer. And, you know, Two Last Words defeated Mai Tai's Gem in the Hoosier Breeder Sophomore Stakes for the Colts and Geldings on Indiana Derby Day on July 8th. That was really one of the best races of the day. Those two put on a show. And what was impressive for Mai Tai's Gem was the fact that Mai Tai's Gem was coming off a long layoff, and Two Last Words had the benefit, was in a form cycle, if you will, and was probably the sharper horse going into the race. And Mai Tai's Gem almost defeated Two Last Words in that race. So, you know, for me, I do like Mai Tai's Gem a whole lot, and you know, Strong Tide certainly, and then the real, I guess we'll call it a wild card, Flatter Him, who's mm-hmm. coming in from Charlestown.
Yep.
The bull ring horse, if you will, and I watched that race back on July the 2nd, and here's what I just wrote down what I saw, and you know, the trouble line is pretty accurate. I said it was covered up the backstretch, and then a tired horse backed up right up into him going into the far turn, got shuffled, and then found room, and then was able to get up for the win. So overcame, I thought, was a lot of trouble. But those are just 6.5 furlong races. Yes, they're two turn races, but this is a whole different ball game going from 6.5 to a mile and 70 yards. Yeah, but the talent's there. Is he good enough to match up against Two Last Words, Mai Tai's Gem, and Strong Tide? The good news is I think the price is going to be right on him. I put him at 8-1 in the morning line. I think I'm accurate on that one, but I'd be interested to see what you thought about Flatter Him, Steve.
I think plenty, and I have great respect for Runco, and yes, it's an Indiana bred, and it makes perfect sense to, you know, to make the drive out with him you know, take this shot. But you know, you got some serious connections. That was a $30,000 weanling purchase at Timonium in 18, and my guess would be that between Parker and 8-1, people need to respect Jeff Runco showing up at Indiana Grand.
Yep, I think so as well. Even though I don't play Charlestown too much, I definitely know the name, and you can look at the stats as well. Just if you don't want to believe the name, the proof is in the pudding, if you will. Hitting at 22% this year, that's enough that will at least perk up my my attention some.
Well, Indiana should be on everybody's radar at this point. Certainly, week after week, whether it's the 11.99% pick five or just the good full fields that's been engaging, and Bill Downs won on Twitter. And Bill, I appreciate it. We'll be looking forward to this afternoon and tomorrow.
You got it, Steve. Thanks.
Bill Downs, everybody. We'll stay right here, and we got 10 minutes, 10, 12, to spend with Todd Pletcher. And told Todd last week I owed him a visit, and I'm glad we waited, Todd, and that you were busy last week, because now we got a grade one win to talk about with Halliday. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve.
You know, I invoked yesterday when we were doing the recap, I invoked heart-to-heart, Brian Lynch's front-running turf type, because everybody watches a horse like this win and says, oh, this horse gets so lucky. it's a little maddening.
Yeah, and I know what you mean. I guess getting loose on the lead in the turf race isn't supposed to happen, maybe, like it can on the dirt. But we thought he ran a terrific race. We were really pleased and proud of his effort, and so excited to get a grade one win for him. So it was a fun win for the whole team.
Hey, talk about his development, and obviously an opportunity like this in the four star Dave. You're certainly going to go after it. But this is a war front out of the Tappet Mare High Tap. Seems to be still on the upswing.
Yeah, he seems to just be getting better and better, and you can see it in his physical development. You can see it in his training. But came into this race really, really thriving, and so I was a little concerned when it rained Saturday morning for about 15 minutes. We had that downpour, and wasn't sure, you know, what that would do to the turf course and how that would affect his chances, because we know he does like a firm course. But he handled it really well. But what was even more interesting was Luis Saez said that he still didn't think it was his preferred surface, that it had a little more cut in it than he would have really, really preferred. So I don't see how he could have run much better anyways, but it was interesting that Luis said that.
Well, and Saez is very effective on a horse like this.
He's a perfect fit for him. And, yeah. The key to his development is we've been really trying to get the horse to relax, basically his whole career. So he's just started to do that, and just starting to kind of, drop the bridle a little bit in the early stages of the race and get into a good rhythm and not pull. And so when he was able to make the lead and then settle nicely for Luis and prick his ears and relax, that really made a huge difference.
Well, the mile, obviously, even though he has won, mile and a 16th, I mean, it feels, at this point, you say stay very focused on this toward Cup.
Yeah, I mean, for now, we've got a pretty clear path. Staying at a mile and something like the Shadwell would probably make sense with a race over the course as a prep. But, I mean, the one thing is that I believe is this horse, as he continues to mature and relaxes in the early part of his races, he will stretch out a little more. And I don't know if you could appreciate the gallop out after the race, but he was still cruising pretty well after the wire and around the turn. So we'll focus on the mile for now, with the idea that he might stretch out a little more down the road.
How much more growing does he have to do? Can you tell?
No, I mean, I think he's pretty much grown to about, you know, the height he's going to be, but he's really, he's a gorgeous horse and holds his condition really well. He's a fun horse to train. He really enjoys his job. He's an impressive horse to watch breed. So it's been nice seeing him come along and continue to get better and better.
Well, a grade one win, always good for the Saratoga season. It's been a good season in general, winning at a steady clip. And we'll talk about particularly some of the two-year-olds in a second, but it's going to get we're going to get short on time. We've got about 5-6 minutes. Let's get a quick update on the Derby prospects. And Dr. Post, where do you stand? And we got a jock to announce anytime soon?
Well, to be honest, we haven't totally decided what we're going to do yet. Talking to the Biolas every couple of days, the horse breathes very well. Trying to make the decision on whether we want to go to the Derby and take a shot there, or take a softer approach and go maybe the Jim Dandy Preakness route. So we're continuing to monitor how he trains and kind of keep an eye on what everybody else is doing, but we haven't made a firm commitment yet.
Well, we're waiting for some other decisions from some other fence sitters, most notably Rushy from Michael McCarthy. But if Rushy or Dr. Post demur, it would open the door for money moves. Is that still a serious consideration if there was a spot for him?
We've had some peripheral discussions about it. I wouldn't say that it's real high on the radar, but we are keeping an eye on it. And, you know, there's a plane leaving on the 31st that we can keep it in play. But again, you know, a horse that's never run a mistake and it's still pretty lightly raced. It's unlikely that it's in the cards if the field stays intact.
All right, that is more than we knew, and Happy Saver had been kind of removed from consideration a lot earlier. Give everybody an update on the very impressive Happy Saver.
Yeah, no, he's doing great. Really pleased with him. So, most likely scenario is he'll go to the Jim Dandy, and then that goes well. We've got our eye on the Preakness, but. I guess, the other race that's in play a little bit for him and Money Moves would be the Tessio on September 7th as a building block to the Preakness as well. So we'll just kind of have to play it by ear here over the next week and see how they're all three training.
Let's also, we'll stay on the stake storyline for a second. Todd Pletcher with us. The Wonder Again winner, Sweet Melania. Speaking of front-running types that wire fields, you drew the inside for the Lowe's American Pharoah Filly and second start of the year coming up in the Lake George on Friday.
Yeah, she's doing well. I like the inside draw for her. She's got good tactical speed, but she can also sit off if needed, so we'll just kind of play it off the break and let Jose Ortiz figure out the best way to get around there. But very pleased with her breeze coming into this, and hopefully she can continue doing what she's been doing, which is always show up and run well.
Well, and speaking of showing up and running well, everybody has anointed Asham as the 2021 candidate. Talk about his 84 buyer performance in the maiden breaker, going 9 furlongs.
Oh, it was good to see. You know, he's a horse that kind of created some rough trips for himself a few times. We expected him to break his maiden a little sooner, but he had a good favorable pace scenario set up for him and was able to just settle and relax and make one late run, which is what he's been wanting to do. So hopefully that was the race where he started to figure it all out and continue to build on that.
Well, certainly, as an $800,000 purchase, there was a lot anticipated, although he was a May foal, and so it might not necessarily, he had just turned three physically when he even debuted, I think, earlier in the year.
Yeah, and I think he's starting to figure things out mentally a little bit now, and that'll help. I could see him potentially being one of these horses that, at the end of the day, appreciates a little more ground. You know, mile and three eighths, mile and a half, some of those type of races might be in the cards going down the road.
Quick updates on the 2-year-olds, Todd, and who we might see closing weekend coming back.
Well, we've got Mutasa back, who is doing great. He worked 5/8 yesterday and is pointing to the hopeful. We're really pleased with his debut, and he trained like he was going to come out running, and we're happy he did. Very, very impressive watching him train, so we're excited about the hopeful for him.
And you also had, you've had a bunch of maiden winners, and not only was there Asham, what about Barry Schwartz's Ridgeling, Obsessed?
Yeah, I thought, we'd been looking forward to getting him stretched out, and I thought he was very game. He's able to fight back and get back up for second, and I think with that race under his belt, he's another one similar to Asham that could continue to improve.
Well, and then how many unraced 2-year-olds are kicking around the barn?
Got a couple, hopefully. No, we have some maidens that are, been training pretty well, that'll be making their debuts here in the next couple of weeks. So we're excited about that.
How about Spinoff? That was actually a head lifter.
Yeah, he's another one that we've always had really high expectations and high hopes for. I thought that was sort of a breakthrough performance. He came back and breezed really well on Saturday. So right now we have him slated for the Woodward, and nice. Excited about the way he's coming up to it. So hopefully he can kind of live up to those 3-year-old expectations we had for him.
Well, there's been a bunch of others. Moretti won, and Nota Madeline, and any number. Todd, I appreciate it. Finish strong, and we'll talk soon.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
Todd Pletcher, everybody, and Bill Downs, Alan Foreman, Bob Edwards, Rich Migliori, and if you missed Larry Donlin, tune in tomorrow morning, 6:20 or so, and you'll be treated to 45 minutes with a real race tracker. Everybody on that list, race trackers. Talk to you tomorrow. Good luck today.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing 2-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all 3 PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Pletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for
starters. We have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Dolly America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow! What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.com.